Our brother Stephen Robinson will exhort us this morning. Brother Stephen.
Good morning. For our exhortation this morning, we're going to focus on our first portion reading found in Genesis chapter 37. We have had in our readings in Genesis over the last few days a number of contrasts. And these contrasts, I think, lead us to a number of important exhortations. Yesterday, in our reading in Genesis chapter 36, we read all about the family of Esau. We read all about his sons, his wives, how all his sons were dukes and they were rulers in the land that they lived in. And this chapter full of names stresses to us the importance and the impact that Esau's family had. And in chapter 37 this morning, we read all about the family of Jacob. And what a contrast there is between these two families, between these two brothers. The family of Esau ruled the land they lived in. They were rulers, they were kings, they were dukes. Jacob was a stranger in the land of Canaan, in the land that his father was a stranger. Esau's family was large, it was powerful. Jacob's family was much smaller, it was relatively insignificant. And Jacob's family had a lot of problems. We don't read about any problems in the family of Esau. I'm sure that there were problems, but the description were given of Esau's family, if we put it in modern day terms, would have been like this. If you asked about Esau's family, you would have heard about how all his kids were doing really well. They were really successful. They were all CEOs of large companies. They were all famous doctors or lawyers. This was Esau's family. That's what his family was all about. If you asked about his family, you just hear how successful they were, what wonderful people they were. If you asked about Jacob's family, you would hear an entirely different story. You would hear about how things weren't going so well for him. One of his daughters had been raped. Two of his sons had then murdered the man in his family who raped his daughter. That was Simeon Levi. You would hear how one of his wives, Rachel, had died in childbirth and he had two motherless young boys. You would hear how another of his sons, Reuben, had committed incest. You would hear how another son, Judah, in this case, had a child with what was thought to be a prostitute, but turned out to be his daughter-in-law. You would hear about how Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher, the sons of the handmaids, were obviously into something bad because Joseph brings back an evil report of what they were doing. We don't know what they were into, but obviously it wasn't good. Jacob's family was a mess. And that's what we get from his family. It really was a disaster. And the interesting thing is, between these two brothers, Esau was the ungodly one. Esau was the one who really didn't care about the things of God. Esau was the one who didn't care about spiritual things. Jacob was the one who was godly. Jacob was the one who was spiritual. Jacob was the one who cared about God. But it was Jacob's family that was a mess. It's interesting also in Romans chapter 9, verse 13, we get God's opinion of these two brothers. In Romans chapter 9, in verse 13, it says, "As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated." And isn't it ironic that it's Jacob, the one God loved that had all these problems in his life, that he had to suffer so much? Everything was so hard for Jacob. He had to work through so many things. His family was such a mess. And I think that leads us to the question is, why was it like this for Jacob? Why, if God had blessed him, if God loved him, if God cared for him, why were things so difficult for him? I think this is a question that we often ask in our lives when we face problems. And even if we don't have to go through things like Jacob went through, even if our situation isn't quite like his, I think we all wonder when we face difficulties, why is God doing this to us? Why are we facing these things? Why doesn't God make things easier for us since he cares about us, since he loves us? Well, why did God let Jacob's family be like this? Well, we have the benefit of having a big picture view. We can read all about Jacob's life, and we can see what God was doing in it. And we can see that God was working with a character flaw that Jacob had. And God was setting up situations in his life, giving him problems that would force him to deal with his character flaw. And God was trying to bring about a change in Jacob's life and develop him spiritually. And I think that's one thing we need to do in our life when we face problems, is to step back and say, what is God doing? Is there something he's trying to get us to change? Is there something God's trying to bring our attention to that we need to focus on, that we need to work on? Because this could be a reason why we're facing some of the difficulties we face. I think this is the case in the life of Jacob. You see, he had a problem. He had a problem that he had a tendency to be deceptive. He had a tendency to be crafty. He had a tendency to rely on himself rather than on his God. And we see this throughout the early part of his life. We see Jacob's craftiness in getting the birthright from Esau. God had told Jacob's mother that the older son would serve the younger son. But Jacob, it seems, was devising plans to help this along a little bit. And he got Esau to sell him his birthright for a bowl of food. We see the same type of behavior a little bit later on, this time with his mother's encouragement, as he tricks his father into giving him the blessings. And then Jacob was sent off to Laban. And once again, we see some of his craftiness, some of his deceptiveness in Genesis chapter 30. You may want to turn there with me. Genesis chapter 30 and at verse 37. We read about what Jacob was doing. Genesis chapter 30 and at verse 37. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar and of hazel and chestnut trees and pilled white strakes in them and made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had pilled before the flocks in the gutters and the watering troughs when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived before the rods and brought forth cattle, ring-straight, speckled, and spotted. You see, Jacob had a deal with Laban here that all the ring-straight, the speckled, and spotty cattle would be his, and all the better-looking ones would be Laban's. And so he devised this plan to help encourage the flocks to give ring-straight, speckled, and spotted flocks. This plan, to us, seems almost comical. Because this having these stakes in front of the eyes of the animals when they brought forth their kids makes absolutely no difference to whether they're going to be ring-straight, speckled, or spotted. But Jacob thought he was doing something here. He thought he was involved in the situation, that he was helping to push the odds towards the outcome he wanted. He was relying on his cleverness. And he didn't really understand that it was God here who was working, that it was God who was making the outcome of these baby sheep and goats, making them be speckled and spotted and ring-straight. See, God was not Jacob's motivating master in his life. Jacob was still relying on himself. He was relying on his deception and his cleverness. He still had things to learn. And then God tells Jacob to go back to the land of his fathers. We read of God's instruction in Genesis 31 and verse 3. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. So Jacob hears God's instruction, and Jacob follows God's instruction, and he prepares to go back into the land of his fathers. But you see, Jacob doesn't really trust that God will be with him entirely. And he thinks that he has to run away from Laban, to steal away in the middle of the night, in case Laban would stop him from leaving. Stop him from leaving with his family and with his herds. Jacob does this because he's afraid of Laban. We read of this in Genesis 31:31, when Laban asks him, why does he do this? Genesis 31 and 31. Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure, thou wouldest take by force thy daughter from me. See, Jacob fears Laban more than he trusts his God. And so he relies on his own deception, his own cleverness to try to work the outcome of this event. And it's a disaster, just like all his other examples of his cleverness and his deception. And God presents him with another situation. And this time, Jacob is forced to rely and to trust his God because there's no way out here. We read about this in Genesis chapter 32, verses 6 to 11. In Genesis 32, we read, "And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, 'We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him.' Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks, and the herds, and the camels into two bands. And he said, 'If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape.' And Jacob said, 'But O God of my father Abraham, and the God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidst to me, return unto thy country and into thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy at the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidest, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude.'" Jacob's in a desperate situation here, because he can't run away. Esau's coming with 400 men, and if Esau's coming to destroy him, there's nothing Jacob can do. He cannot escape from these 400 men. And he finally realizes that all he can do is trust in his God. And if his God is with him, then everything is going to work out. If his God's against him, there's nothing he can do. And we see his pleading with this angel as he wrestles with him, asking for a blessing. And we see a change in Jacob's life as he realizes that he has to trust in his God. He cannot do it himself. And that's what God wanted Jacob, the point that God wanted Jacob to get to, and to realize that he had to trust in God, and if he did, God would be with him. And he didn't have to rely on himself. He didn't have to rely on craftiness or cleverness. He could simply trust in his God. Jacob had a problem with deception. He had a problem with being overly crafty. He had a problem with not relying on his God. And over and over and over again throughout the early part of his life, God sets up situations where Jacob has an opportunity to respond, to change, and he fails time and time again. And so God keeps giving him more situations and more problems to force him to come to a point where he realizes that this isn't going to work anymore. Over and over, God sets up situations to force him to come to terms with his weakness and to grow. And Jacob finally does. He finally gets to the point where he trusts in his God. And he realizes that the only way he's going to succeed is if his God is with him. He gets to that point. How much better would it have been for Jacob if he had learned these lessons earlier in life? How much grief and heartache could he have avoided? And how much better would it have been for his family if he had gotten to this point earlier on? I think one of the reasons his family was such a mess is that they saw this earlier Jacob, a Jacob who lived by craftiness and deception, and we see that in their lives. He hadn't been able to teach his wives and his children to trust in God and to rely on God. He hadn't been able to help them to develop spiritually because he was struggling with these things himself. And as a result, you see in his older sons that they made a mess of their lives. His life would have been a lot easier. It would have been a lot better if he had learned his lessons earlier on, and if he'd been able to pass the things he learned on to his family. I think Jacob is an excellent example of God repeatedly putting a situation in front of someone in order to teach a lesson, in order to develop character. You know, God does this in our lives as well. And we need to learn to try to look for God at work in our life, to look at the things that we have to deal with, and try to see if God's trying to teach us a lesson. Because the faster we learn the lesson, the sooner we can move on, and the less we will compound the problems that we're facing. But then we come to the life of Joseph, and we read about his life in Genesis chapter 37. And Joseph was very different than his father, in that none of the things that happened to him, none of the problems that he faced are a result of a character flaw in him. The problems he faced are not a result of God trying to change some or correct some character flaw in the life of Joseph. It's very different. It wasn't Joseph's fault that his father loved him more because he was the favorite son, because he was the son of his favorite wife. Actually, it's interesting what we're told about why Jacob loved Joseph. In Genesis 37, verse 3, it says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. He gave him a coat of many colors." Joseph was the son of Jacob's old age. I think it's referring here to the fact that Joseph shared in a spiritual aspect that Jacob developed in his old age. The earlier Jacob, the Jacob that lived on craftiness and cleverness, is seen in his older sons. But the more spiritual Jacob was seen in his son Joseph. But Joseph suffered the consequences of following his father's more spiritual side because his brothers ended up hating him for it. They hated him for being obedient to God and to his father. But that wasn't Joseph's fault. It wasn't Joseph's fault that God gave to him two prophetic dreams about how things would be in the future. And he told these dreams to his brothers, and I think it was correct to tell them about these dreams, because when God gives you a message, you need to tell people about this message. You can't just hide it. But Joseph suffered for it because his brothers hated him even more. It's interesting, it says that his brothers couldn't speak peaceably to him. And the word peaceably there is the word shalom. That's the word that Jews commonly greet each other with. They say shalom to each other. His brothers couldn't even greet Joseph. They couldn't even say shalom to him. They couldn't speak peaceably to him. They hated him. But this wasn't Joseph's fault. Joseph was obedient to his father, and when he was asked to go out and seek his brother, and he goes the extra mile. He can't find him in Shechem where they're supposed to be, but he doesn't go home again. He stays around, he wanders around trying to find them. I think it's interesting in verse 15 of chapter 37, it says, "A certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, 'What seekest thou?' And he said, 'I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks.' And the man said, 'They are departed hence, for I heard them say, Let us go to Dothan.' And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan." There's some indication that this certain man may have been an angel directing Joseph to his brothers. The indication comes from the fact that this man found Joseph rather than Joseph finding this man. And this man knew exactly where Joseph's brothers had gone. Now, his brothers were feeding their flocks around Shechem. Shechem was the town that recently Simeon and Levi had just slaughtered. It's not likely they were on very friendly terms with all of the local people in that area. It's not likely they would tell them exactly where they were going and where what their whereabouts would be. But this man knew all these things, and he directed Joseph to his brothers. It doesn't really matter whether this was an angel or not. What it matters was that when Joseph found out where his brothers were, he went. He went to find them. Joseph went the extra mile for his brothers because that was the right thing to do. You know, I think that if I had been Joseph and I knew my brothers hated me and I went to look for them and they weren't where they were supposed to be, I think I would have figured I'd done my job. I'd look for them. They weren't there. I probably wasn't going to get a great reception when I found them. You know, I would just go home to my dad and say, "Look, I looked for them. They aren't there. I have no idea where they might have gone." And left it at that. You can send a bunch of your servants out and maybe they'll find him. Just one person is going to be kind of difficult. But that wasn't Joseph's way of doing things. Joseph was obedient to his father and he was going to go the extra mile. He was going to try to find them. Because that was the right thing to do. And he suffered the consequences of that. And the consequences were that he was thrown into a pit and he was sold into slavery in Egypt. That wasn't his fault that all these things happened to him. That's just the way his life was. Joseph didn't deserve any of these things. So after being sold as a slave into Egypt, He finds himself in Potiphar's house, where he works really hard. And he trusts in his God, and his God blesses him, and he's promoted. And as a result, he attracts the attention of Potiphar's wife. And he resists her advances. He does what's right. And as a result, he's falsely accused and thrown into jail. Joseph did all the right things. He put God first in his life. He put his faith and his trust in his God. And he lived his life based on these principles. And instead of having an easy life, his life had even more problems. Where did it get him? Doing what was right all this time. It got him into a jail as a slave in Egypt. None of this was his fault. And yet all these things happened to him. Why? Why was he given all these problems? What was God trying to do with him? Well, in the case of Joseph, God was working with the situations in his life so that he would be in the right place at the right time so that he could save his family. Now, it's interesting that God works this way in Joseph's life, and he works this way in our lives as well. Sometimes things seem to go wrong from our perspective, but it's not going wrong from God's perspective. God is simply working the pieces, putting them into place so that we will be in the right place at the right time so that he can use us most effectively. And I think it's really important for us to realize this. Realize that sometimes the problems we face in our lives are not our fault. We may be doing what is right, but we need to recognize that God's working with us. And if we'll accept that and we'll try to work with the situation that God gives us, then God can use us to accomplish his plan and his purpose. It's interesting, James, in James 1, makes a similar point where he, speaking to his brethren, he says, James chapter 1, and at verse 2 he says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing." He counsels his brethren to be joyful when you have problems, because that means God's working with you and he's developing you, and he has a plan that you can be a part of. Now, the neat thing with the life of Joseph, we can see the big picture. We can see what God was doing and what the end result would be. It would have been awfully hard for Joseph having to live through this. But God was working. And as a result, Joseph was able to save his family from the famine that was going to come on the land. But not only that, he was able to save his brothers spiritually. And this was something that Joseph probably wouldn't have been able to do if he had remained with his brothers in the land of Canaan. He wouldn't have been able to affect them. They would never have listened to him. They probably never would have respected him. And so God took him away from that situation. And through a series of events in his life, put him in the right place at the right time so that he could influence his brethren spiritually in a positive way. But God was only able to do this because Joseph was willing to trust in his God at all times. He was willing to put God first. He was willing to step back and say, no matter what the situation, no matter what is going on, I'm going to do what's right. And that would have been really hard for him. It would have been so easy for Joseph to have just given up and said, you know what? It's not my fault. All these things keep going wrong for me. Obviously, serving God, trusting in whom God is not working. Maybe I should do things my way. It would have been really easy for Joseph in Egypt to just get lost in Egyptian culture, to give in to the pressure to conform to Egyptian life and Egyptian way of thinking. But Joseph didn't do this, and God was able to work with him as a result of his decision. I think this is a real encouragement for all of us, because God was working in the life of Joseph. He was working in the world then, and he's still working in the world today, and he can work in our lives as well. And God can do incredible things in our life through the problems we face if we're willing to put our trust in him, willing that no matter what the difficulty or what the problem that we're facing, if we're willing to cast our cares upon him and trust that he'll do what's right. And we come this morning now to remember our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And are we not all so thankful that he was able to look beyond all the problems that he faced in his life? And he faced more problems than we'll ever face. He faced more problems than Jacob did. He faced more problems than Joseph did. But he was able to get beyond them. He was able to work through them because he looked beyond the problems. He looked at what the end result would be. He looked beyond the shame and the pain that he was facing. And he trusted in his God and he overcame. And we're so thankful that he did overcome. Because as a result of him overcoming sin, we can have a part in the kingdom that will soon be established on this earth. And that's what we come this morning to remember his sacrifice and to remember the hope that we have through him if we can follow his example and if we can overcome the events that we face in our lives.